psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, the voice you trust for the family you love.
That's when I find myself praying, Lord Jesus, I don't have the strength, but you do.
Show me the tooth you're going to lose. That one right there. All right, I tell you what, can I pull it?
No.
That's a statement in which we reaffirm our commitment to the three fundamental moral issues, life, marriage, and liberty.
This is Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson, along with Ryan Dobson and Luann Crane.
You know, Dad and Luann, I would never, ever want to go back to my teenage years. It's not that they were bad. I'm just happy with where I'm at now. I would never want to revert back to that time.
It may surprise you, Ryan, but I feel the same way. I am enjoying life as much right now as I ever remember having it.
Me too.
I just enjoyed every phase along the way. You know, the parenting of two small children, and they grew up and got into adolescence. I would have skipped that part probably, but it is a pleasure to be enjoying what I'm doing now. And I can tell you, speaking personally, Luann, I would not go through adolescence myself again, would you?
I do think one time is enough. I mean, just hearing you talk, my mind is all the way back to those junior high hallways in Wilson High School in upstate New York, and I have no desire to return there.
I've only had two tough years in my life, and that was the 13th, 14th years. Just very, very difficult. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today. We're going to talk about the teenage years. We have, in fact, an example of one of those families, and there are millions of them out there, where every day is a battle. And you know, you've got a 13, 14, 15-year-old youngster in puberty, and there is all this turmoil. The brain is reeling at this time. I think I mentioned on the air that in my new book, Bringing Up Girls, I dealt extensively with puberty and adolescence. That may be the most important chapter in the book because you need to know what's going on hormonally at that time and how you can best deal with it. And so what we're going to do today is hear an interview that we conducted with a young woman who tells about her adolescent years. And her father was in the studio with us talking about what that meant for him. So the title of the book is Daughter's Gone Wild, Dad's Gone Crazy. And it is a fascinating read.
Well, the title alone is sure to cause some curiosity. This is a great and encouraging conversation with Pastor Charles Stone and his grown daughter, Heather Anderson, to talk about how in her teens, Heather really went from a sweet little girl to a juvenile delinquent. Pastor Stone and his wife, Cheryl, really went through the ringer with Heather, and there's so much that we can learn from their experiences. Again, their book, Daughter's Gone Wild, Dad's Gone Crazy. A great title, Ryan.
It is. Isn't it neat that they could come in here and be so honest about their struggles and then help other people by putting it in a book? If our listeners want to get a copy of that, they can request it at myfamilytalk.com. A little more about our guests. Charles Stone is the senior pastor at Ginger Creek Community Church in Chicago, and Heather is one of his three grown children. She is a registered nurse and lives near Chicago with her husband, Charlie.
Here they are now with Dr. Dobson on this Family Talk broadcast.
Welcome, folks. Dr. Stone, thank you for being with us.
Great to be here.
It's better to be writing about this topic than it is to be experiencing it today.
Oh, it is. In retrospect, it's a much better place now than it was going through it.
You have been through what might be called a nightmare.
Oh, no question. Nightmare, battle, war. The adjectives could go on and on.
Heather, I just made reference to the 13th year. Was that what was true for you? I understand you were kind of a perfect daughter till you were about 13. Is that right?
I was. It must be the lucky number, the unlucky number 13 or something. But it was definitely 13.
She came out of the blue.
It just, well, when I grew up and I was, I mean, the perfect pastor's kid. I was, you know, number one on the list to babysit for everybody. I volunteered at church. I was at church, what, three times a week. I was, you know, straight A student. And I went to a Christian school. Well, during those years, I was always the teacher's pet, but I was nerdy and skinny and gangly, and I tried to be kind of, his dad would say in the South, too big for my britches, you know. I know all the answers. I raise my hand all the time. And that didn't win me a lot of friends. So growing up, I was kind of picked on. And then it all came to a culmination in my eighth grade year when all the boys in my class got together. And this is these are the kids I've been around since fourth grade. Yeah. They all got together and wrote me a note that was making fun of me and the way that I looked. And that just tore me apart. And I think in that really sensitive time of life, it deeply, deeply wounded me and wounded my spirit and affected me. And that's really what made me draw the conclusion, like, well, if this is the kind of people that Christians are and this is the type of Christian behavior, so to speak, then I want none of it. And so at 13...
You just got very angry is what it boils down to.
I was so hurt. And so then I got angry.
Yeah.
And it just... It changed the course of my life for that period of time.
Well, you're a beautiful young woman today, and no one would guess that you came through that. But that is the point. Nearly everybody does, and some more than others. And it is really a stressful time, isn't it? I mean, that can be not only hard for mom and dad, but very, very difficult for a 13, 14-year-old, too.
I wouldn't go back if people paid me money. The teenage years are very, very hard. And I just sympathize with anyone out there that's going through that time of life because you're trying to figure out who you are and who you want to be. And so the smallest things from your peers are seemingly things that seem to be small.
They stick in
comments,
your heart, don't they?
They do. They just they just get inside you. And it's something that takes a long time to really get over.
Charles, may I call you that?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Sure, yeah.
I have said to many young people through the years who are especially going through that period of life that if you can survive the 13th and 14th years, you can deal with almost anything life throws at you.
Yes.
But for some, they just can't roll with it. And they're mad, they're angry, they don't like themselves, and don't like anyone who tries to tell them what to do. And that is kind of a pattern that you obviously experienced.
Yes, and I think during those 2 years, 13 and 14, it continued. If it were just 2 years, we could have managed it, maybe Heather, but it was like a five-year journey just tussling with her and trying to deal with her strong-willedness. In fact, even before she turned 13, we had read all your books, and Heather would have really been the poster child for the strong-willed child. She would have.
Heather, you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Well, what was the manifestation of it? How did it look? What happened? So you have this youngster who everybody loves, and she does everything right, and she's making great grades in school. And all of a sudden, what kind of behavior did you begin to see?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back was the letter that she got from one of these boys. And leading up to that time, one of the lessons we learned in retrospect, both my wife and I, we had a younger daughter who had a brain tumor. At age 1, age 3, age 5, she had brain surgery. Without realizing it, we were actually giving our, I guess I would say, strategic presence to our youngest daughter. Even though we were with Heather, I took her on dates, we took her to church, we really weren't there for her. And I think part of that, she couldn't articulate it, and neither could we. So I think that built up. Yeah. At age 13, this experience she had. And then, as a dad, you're supposed to take care of your kids. I went to the principal, and this was obviously something this boy shouldn't have done. But what happened was he only got a slap on the hand. And so Heather, not only was she hurting from this boy did this to me, but the authority figures like me, like the principal, who represent God, did not come to my aid. And that just made it even worse. And then it just kind of went downhill from there.
You know, I have for at least 30 years been talking about this. Because adults frequently stand with their hands in their pockets and watch kids absolutely dismantle each other.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
they think this is just what kids do, and they'll get over it. It makes them tougher. It makes them stronger. But it will either make you stronger or it'll break you.
That's right.
And in some cases, the youngster who is subjected to this pulls into a shell, accepts the implications of inferiority, and then is just crushed in spirit.
Right, yeah. And with Heather, both of us are very strong-willed. And I think part of the brunt coming toward me was that Cheryl, and by the way, my wife and I were a team through this whole process. Mm. I thank God for a wonderful, wonderful wife. But being a strong-willed person and recognizing my default mode is to control, when Heather began to act out of this pain she was experiencing, I thought, well, the way to deal with it is I'll crack down on her. Mm. And in some cases, parents have to do that. But one of the things I realized was that instead of cracking down, I should have been much more tender, go against kind of my default mode to be there for her and try to understand and help her process this instead of causing her to squelch this expression she was trying to connect the dots with.
She was telling you something.
She sure was, loud and clear.
Hey, describe what the home life was like during that time. What was Heather's behavior, we'll say the 13th year. It got even worse later, what was it in the beginning? Was she back-talking and refusing to obey?
In the beginning, she was, let's say, going into age 12. Again, the great, perfect little kid who was doing well in school, who was the example in church. When this happened, we began to see some things at school. She began, instead of having a straight A's, which she usually made, grades began to drop a little bit. We began to get some notes that she was kind of back-talking. And then we began to realize she was hanging around with some of these kids that we wouldn't approve of. That created some more of these battles. And then finally, the thing that happened probably within a few months in this Christian school, they kicked her out because they just couldn't handle what was going on. So we began to see some school issues at home, more of a belligerence instead of immediately responding like she did when she was 10, 11, 12. She said, I'm not sure if I want to do this or not.
It's a whole new ball game.
Exactly.
Heather, what were you thinking?
Well, what was happening is there was the core group of kids, and then there were sort of the outlier kids, the ones that, you know, had a little bit of the attitude or who got sent to the Christian schools because they were having problems elsewhere. And you find that it's sad, but even though those are sort of the bad kids, they're a lot more accepting than that core group of the sort of the Christian kids. So I gravitated towards them because, you know, well, they accept me. They're not making fun of me. And I think in order to even distance ourselves even further from that core group of Christian kids who had in some way or another to all of us probably kind of, you know, made fun of us or done something to alienate us, we alienated ourselves even more from them by acting out and by, you know, our appearance was different. We acted differently. We had kind of the attitude. We hung out in a group because this kind of our teachers accused us of a gang activity, which there was no gang activity. But
was it a goth kind of feel? Was it black and
I can answer that one.
Well, no. Well, it was. It's there's an evolution.
Doc Martens.
Though.
These Doc Martens.
But there's an evolution. There's an evolution. I can tell you the evolution.
So it got worse with the passage of time.
Right. You start out with, you know, you play with the Kool-Aid. You know, you put the Kool-Aid in your hair, and ooh, that's bad. And then you start wearing these shirts that had, you know, maybe like band names on them. And then you get, you know, the combat boots. And then you just keeps going. And then you get the dark hair. And then you get the piercings.
And that's scary for a dad when his daughter, who wore these nice little appealing dresses, little frilly dresses, and she starts dressing like these people you don't want her to be around. And now she's dressing like one of them.
The clothes get tighter. They get more outlandish. More.
And where is that going?
That's exactly
right. What does this mean?
Well, let me share something that it hurts to even think about this. I include it when we wrote this, but when Heather was going through this time, the youth group went to Six Flags Over Georgia, you know, for a weekend youth trip. Yeah. And Heather met a boy, and she had shared with a friend of hers what they had done. They had kissed. Okay, her first kiss.
So innocent. He was like this Christian kid. He was nice.
Yeah.
He was a nice boy.
Well, we could probably still get an argument here if we work on it.
Yes, that's right. Well, I found out that at this Christian concert, one of the concert venues, they were headbanging. Now, I didn't know what headbanging was about, except it sure didn't sound good. It wasn't a Glenn Campbell-ish kind of a thing at all. Well, Heather had shared with a friend of hers that they had kissed. Her mother had overheard a conversation between Heather and this other friend. Her mother promptly called Cheryl, my wife. Cheryl told me, and I just imagine Heather was just becoming this horrible, terrible, terrible person by kissing a boy. And what I did, Dr. Dobson, was when I learned about this, I was just so full of anger and so full of rage. Heather was coming home that afternoon, and unfortunately she wasn't there when I heard about this. When she walked in, I literally cornered her like a bear over a little deer. And I said something to her. I said, Heather, after I said a few other things, I said, Heather, do you want to become a prostitute? Now, that was a hateful, that was a mean thing in my mind. But what was going through my mind was, here's a 13-year-old. She kisses this stranger. And like you were saying, where would that lead? Yeah. And that was one of those lessons for me about being careful what you say.
And that hurt a lot, didn't it, Heather?
Yes, and in no way am I advocating sending your daughter to Six Flags to kiss boys. That's not, you know, what I'm saying. But what that boy was to me was, after all these, I felt like I had been so rejected by all these guys, it felt good just to have some guy that was interested in me.
Yeah.
And while, you know, I mean, there's plenty of things wrong with, you know, meeting some guy and then just kissing him on that, you know, the next day or whatever, I know what I was looking to do was kind of fill that part of myself that felt so rejected.
Yeah.
And then to have my dad, in turn, reject, it was almost like a double rejection, because I already felt rejected, and then my dad, do you want to be a prostitute? I mean, it was, kissing a boy at Six Flags is very different, I think, than...
Well, again, yeah,
what is so painful here is that I can identify with both of you. You know, with a 13-year-old, this is a sexualized society, and kids get in trouble early.
Yeah.
And in fact, those who have low self-esteem are most likely to try to fill that void sexually. So that scared him to death. But I also understand, Heather, how you would feel that your own dad, who knows you and loves you and is committed to you, would call you something like that. It's satanic. It's built for wickedness on both sides.
I think one thing that could have not headed that off, but during that time when I felt so rejected by those boys, to have my own dad build me up, to be there from where, and to, my dad is really good at getting things done, like A, B, C, you know, this is accomplished.
Engineering
is,
background.
Yes, he's very, very, yes. And to have him, instead of connecting with me by getting things done, to have him connect with me emotionally and to reaffirm who I am, and I think that would have been one of the things that would have kind of built me up and given me a little bit, maybe increased my self-esteem or given me something a little more to go on. So because, and I'm not at all blaming my dad for this, but I felt like, you know, I was just looking for someone, anyone, any male that would validate me.
Hmm. The worst was yet to come, though. You're just getting into this, and you began to slide farther and farther into the mire.
That's right.
How about at 14, what were you like?
Well, 14, you know, 14 built on 13. So I was, you know, still doing what I was doing, and I started drinking and smoking, some drug use, and I started, you know, heavier into the boys. So once I had gotten kicked out of I got kicked out of some Christian schools, in plural. My dad sent me to an inpatient rehab program to get some help, and I was there for about 2 weeks. And then I was outpatient for 1 week.
Heather, did you fight that?
Well, I mean, I fought it. But when I went into that treatment facility, it really didn't help me. Because a lot of the kids there, they just didn't want to change. They didn't care about changing. And so we all sort of became friends and, you know, shared stories. And even a lot of kids would get together outside of the rehab. So that's kind of debatable.
Yeah, I think when we look back over all the experiences Heather had, I think we sent her to 6 or 7 various hospitals or BRAC camps or these Christian kind of extensive wilderness institutes. The way I look at it, when Heather came back from those, she wasn't this miraculously changed daughter that we kind of hoped she would have been. From her perspective, some of them perhaps increased her sense of abandonment. But the way I look at it is, if someone were running off a cliff, they're 100 yards from a cliff, you rope them and you grab them just before they go off the cliff, I think those experiences stop the downward spiral. And I do believe she learned some different ways of relating and the consequences of the pain of some of the of this brat camp in Utah were so great. I believe it made her think a little more about, okay, am I going to continue this knowing that my mom and dad may send me to another one?
Yeah. You say in the book that you, Heather, worked with maybe 20 psychologists, counselors, and pastors and people that could help. Did you look to them for assistance, or did you dig in and not cooperate with them?
I 99% of the time dug in and didn't cooperate. I wanted to go back and talk about those camps. I would agree with what my dad said. While I went there, and I don't feel like I didn't come out saying, "Hallelujah, no more drugs, no more this, I'm cured." It was something that it gave me a break from the life that I was living. Yeah. And I would say that that's more of a last resort because it did have a lot of other implications that were negative. However, I really believe that those different types of places and having that lack of continuity in the life I was living enabled me not to become addicted to drugs. And yeah. it prevented me from progressing because I progressed so quickly. Mm-hmm. Give me 2 months at home and I was into something totally different. And so it did take me out of my environment and... therefore, that was definitely a benefit. But I think that is what those little camps enabled me to do was to, it took me out of that group that was sucking me under. And when you sort of, because especially at that age, and you find out, I mean, those people don't care about you either. And so when you come back from these camps, you can get, you know, reacquainted with these people and back in their company, but it's a lot more difficult. So it does make really getting sucked down into something more difficult when you do have those breaks of time when you're away.
Speaking of breaks in time, we are out of time for today's program, but I'm really anxious to get to the practical suggestions in your book for what you did that worked and what you did that didn't work and what you would recommend to others, not only as a father, but also as a daughter who's been through it. The title of the book again is Daughters Gone Wild and Dad's Gone Crazy. Boy, that's a great title because I sure understand what you're describing there. And let's pick it up right here next time and take it a step further. We've gotten you up to 14 years of age. I don't know if we're going to make it to 18, but we'll give it a go. And thanks for being our guest, for the honesty in this book. There are a lot of people out there that need to read this book that might not even know about it at this time. So Dr. Charles Stone and Heather Anderson, it's good to have you all here, and we'll talk some more next time.
Great, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, now you do know about their book, Daughters Gone Wild, Dad's Gone Crazy, available here at MyFamilyTalk.com. Ryan, what a story Dr. Charles Stone and his daughter Heather Anderson have shared with us. There is much more to come. We'll catch up with that tomorrow.
It really was, Luann. You know, Dad, at the top of our program, you referenced what happens in a girl's mind, in her brain, right around the age 13. Can you tell us what makes that age so significant in a young girl's life?
Well, it all comes down to hormones, Ryan. When I was in graduate school, the professors talked more about the social pressures and implications of adolescence, but it is chemical in nature. You know what? I would like to answer your question about what is really taking place in a girl's brain at 12, 13, 14 years of age, and it can continue for five more years. But I look at the clock, and we don't have time for me to do that. So let's reserve some time tomorrow for me to go to that chapter in my book, Bringing Up Girls, called Puberty and Adolescence. And I'd like to talk a little bit about what Heather was experiencing and why it was so difficult for her entire family, particularly her father.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That sounds great. For parents who want to learn more about that subject, we can send them a copy of your latest book, Bringing Up Girls. And we have even more information about how to get an autographed copy of that at our website, which is MyFamilyTalk.com.
And we've also posted a link there, Ryan, to Pastor Stone's blog, as well as this reminder that their book, Daughter's Gone Wild, Dad's Gone Crazy, is also there. If you prefer to give us a call for any of these resources, our number, 1-877-732-6825, 877-732-6825, or drop us a note, Family Talk, P.O. Box 51010, Colorado Springs, Colorado, 80949.
And let me say one more time, I think I hinted at this, but every parent of a youngster who's coming through elementary school and approaching the adolescent years, or is in them already, really ought to avail themselves of the research that's now available on the explanation of behavior and how to deal with it. And in order to do that, you have to understand what's going on in the brain. We'll talk about that next time.
We sure will.